Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Hello, and welcome to this week's installment of Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. And as today's program debuts on the Internet, we're in the dead of winter, an especially tough time for many. Holidays are over and the pressure of earning a living is back upon us, and we now need to tackle all those projects and resolve those issues that we put off until after the holidays. And to cap it off, nights are long, days are short, and if you're like me and you live in the northern parts of the U.S. or in Canada or Europe, the winds are blustery, it's downright frigid outside, and who likes to go out and shovel the snow or drive in it? And let's face it, January for many of us tends to lead us down in the dumps, suffering from stress and major bouts of cabin fever. But what the heck, depression may strike us any time of the year. And my guest today, Susan Borkin, is going to introduce us to a powerful antidote for depression, and the ingredient also may serve as a positive quick start to your new year. And Susan Borkin is a licensed psychotherapist who practices both in her office in Cupertino, California, and virtually by telephone around the world. And she's also a writing coach who works with stuck writers to overcome emotional and psychological blocks. And she's a dynamic speaker and workshop leader and author of three books, including her latest, The Healing Power of Writing. And hello, Susan, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
That sounds great to me. Hi, Roy. Nice to be here.
Well, please let our audience in on the secret. What is your recommended powerful antidote to depression and stimulus to well-being?
Well, I am a lifelong, well, let's say at least when I was 13 years old, journal keeper, and I firmly believe that writing for personal growth, writing to express yourself, not writing for publication, not worrying about sentence structure and spelling and syntax, but the act of writing, like a personal journal type of writing, is a very powerful way to express anything negative, to just get rid of stuff, to list things that are bothering you. And the important thing, Roy, I think, is that there is now science behind this. It's just not a bunch of, you know, wow, what a cool idea. It sounds a little airy-fairy, but there is evidence that this kind of writing called expressive writing actually does make people feel better, and certainly does enhance the immune system. So there's a lot of good things about writing.
Yeah, there are. Also, I think you mentioned in one of your promotional material that gratitude is an important thing to have this time of year to overcome depression. And why is gratitude so often effective in driving it away? And
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
I said, why is gratitude so effective in driving away depression? Is there a scientific cause and effect, or why do we feel
yes,
so good?
There is. Again, there's science behind that. There's a whole, it's not exactly new anymore, but it's been around the last couple of decades. It's a whole area of positive psychology. And again, science would support this, that positive psychology is about, it's not just smiley faces, you know what I mean? Those yellow smiley faces.
What, me worry that guy on Man
Yeah, exactly. Magazine. No, that's not it. There is a perspective that when we look at things, we're going through the world and we're looking at things that are positive, and we start thinking in terms of focusing. Here's a way to describe it. Imagine you're walking around during the day and you have a camera, and your camera is pointing at all of the negative things. And then you start to feel worse and worse. The economy, the weather, the this,
especially
the that.
Especially if you watch these news channels on TV or listen to somebody like Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, You know, you could get there, even if you're a happy person, you could get down in the dumps. So take the same camera and begin to look at what's working for you, what's good in your life. And there's a wonderful exercise created by Martin Seligman from the positive psychology community, and he calls it three good things. And I particularly love this exercise because a good time to do it is at the end of the day. You know, so before you go to sleep. So three good things would be you say to yourself, what are three good things that happened today? So not only are you writing these down and focusing on them, you're also thinking about the next day. What can you be looking for that's positive?
Yeah, what can I look for tomorrow to make sure I have the same kind of positives or maybe greater positives occur?
And what I suggest to people is, I mean, it can be ordinary things. It can be, you know, I ate a great dinner, or I saw a wonderful movie, or I've got wonderful friends. It can be little things in your life. It can be much more global. It doesn't matter. The idea is to begin to think about what you have instead of what you don't have.
Yeah, that's so positive. I know there's scientific proof to that. Well, you have came up with a great idea for a family gathering, and I know Christmas and New Year's are over, but I'm certain we'll be part of a family gathering or a group not too distant. And what is that family or small group exercise you propose to enhance the positive emotions of each family member or attendee? I thought that was great.
Well, I would just suggest that people sitting around the table, you know, I don't know about you, but I cook my Thanksgiving dinner, you know, and when you have people sitting around, it's really easy to concentrate on the food, which is lovely, you know, great turkey and sweet potatoes and stuff. But what I've done over the years, I have grandchildren, and it's particularly fascinating to see what happens with them. You just go around the table and say what you're grateful for, and you'll be very surprised, even, you know, what young people will say, like, no kidding, you know, you had no idea. And what it does is it kind of moves the conversation away from complaining and stuff and negatives about the world to every person focusing on what is right in the world, what is right in their world. And you don't interrupt.
Yeah, I like how you suggest nobody comment on what was said, like, oh, that's no good.
It's like it's their turn to talk. And so you want to just let go of anybody commenting or questioning. It's just that's how a person feels, and that's that. Yeah. So I can't quite tell you, but if you do it, and it could be a few people or a group, give everybody, 30 seconds, a minute to say something good in their life, something positive that they are grateful for.
Not just families. I think that would be, I was thinking some other places you could do that.
Sure.
Like in small groups at your church would be a great thing. Maybe volunteers could sit around and on a pre-launch to a fundraising campaign and talk about all the good things in their lives or even at
work. It will change. This is California speak, but it'll change the energy for sure, you know, in the area, because what happens is you start sitting, I just did it now as I was talking to you, you start sitting up straighter, you start looking for positive things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not to say don't express the negative, but to emphasize this positive thing, the gratitude exercises are powerful. Now, there's another part to that exercise, which again, is from Martin Seligman, and I really love it. You say something positive, like I say, trying to think of something here. Okay, since I think it's almost my lunchtime here, I'm going to talk about food. Maybe I'm grateful for a recipe I just found. It's like, I made the best turkey chili. It's so good, I can't believe it. And so what I'm grateful for is that I found this wonderful recipe. But then I want to look at the second part, which is, what is it that I did to make that happen? Well, I'll tell you what I did. I went online and I looked up recipes. I was involved in creating that good thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so to add what it is that you did to make that happen. Now, some things appear to be random, but you were somehow in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
So it's really, what it does is it really is a great self-esteem thing, you know, it does help us to feel better.
Yes, you know, I could see that being a useful project, say where you work, a project team or a department or a work group to you know, take some time off each week to just sit around and talk about the positives. I could also see that like in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting or something there where, you know, you're overcoming problems, but you concentrate on all the good things in your life and what you are, have gratitude for. It would take your eye off the problem of the alcoholism or whatever it might be. But
right. And to, I mean, if you just try it now, you know, is or anyone listening, if you just take a moment and think of something in your life that you're grateful for, again, small, large, in between, and then look at what did you have to do with that? How did you make that happen?
Yeah.
So almost, and I suggest that people keep all of this in writing, you know, start a little journal or if you already have a journal, put it in there or it, just keep it someplace, even a computer file. And that way you can sort of look at the things over a period of time, read them all together if you want.
Yeah.
But the idea is to do it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And it really is it's quite a significant shift it can be in terms of how people feel.
Yeah, and many of us, like, because of career, community, and family obligations, it's not practical right now to sit down and write a book. So you're talking about a form of writing where we could undertake it, say, in 10, 15 minutes a day at the end of the day and accomplish a lot of the same purpose. And what are a few of the things that all of us can write about? I mean, just about how we feel or what's going on or what do we write about?
Well, you can write about anything, and there's a wonderful exercise that I really love doing, and I call it free form writing. Now, most of us of a certain age grew up with all kinds of red marks on our English class papers, if you recall. I don't know about you, but I think of it as swimming in red ink.
Yeah, I can remember that kind of thing.
Yep, and so we get spelling corrections and content corrections and syntax and grammar and punctuation. And the wonderful thing about journaling is none of those apply. So freeform writing is you sit down, you take a few deep breaths, and you start writing whatever on your mind.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to worry about spelling and all that kind of stuff.
Right, exactly. And if you don't know what to write, because sometimes it's a little awkward at the beginning and when you start learning to do this, if you don't know what to write, say, I don't know what to write. What am I doing here? And keep writing. And what I suggest, you just mentioned, Roy, 10 or 15 minutes, and I have a, I don't know what's magical about 10 minutes, but it seems to work. Set a little kitchen timer or your phone or whatever for 10 minutes and just sit down and write whatever on your mind, whatever is going on. Just get it out. Express it on paper. And if you do that on a regular basis, I can pretty much guarantee you're going to begin to feel better.
Now, I noticed on your website you talk about you've been teaching personal growth journal writing since 1978. What is a personal growth journal? And
yeah, well, first of all, when you said 1978, I thought that makes me old, but we're talking about addressing middle age here. So yes, I've been doing this for many, many years, and so personal growth journaling is with a focus on self-awareness, self-reflection, the focus on self-care, self-nurturing, as opposed to, again, writing for publication or writing something, you know, that is sort of about something out there. This is about you and checking in with yourself, and it's a it's a great a habit to get into.
Yeah, that's. I notice you even have one of the lessons on your audio series is write your way to an attitude of gratitude. So
right, yes,
you know,
that
sounds like what you're talking about doing then. Well, you're also a writing coach, and what advice do you have for those of us who have had a book long in mind, maybe even started writing one, but we're now suffering from writer's block. Can you give us one or two sure-fired ways to
Absolutely.
Break through that mental blockage?
Well, here's something. I've had people come in and say, well, I've been working on the first sentence here of my book or my paper or whatever for a month, and I'm like, are you, you know, I think to myself, are you kidding? Because what you need to do is the method I just described, which is this free-form writing. And what that means is you start writing and you say the first thing that comes to mind. You get through the 10 minutes and you may say, I'm so sorry, I've just not paid attention to this book for 10 years and I don't know what to write. And if I were the book, what would I write? And just start. And I call it the, it's a very sophisticated term. Are you ready? I call it the butt in chair method. It's called sit down, take a pen or use your keyboard or whatever and start. That's
yeah,
the
quit
most
finding
people
excuses
have.
To put it off, like the holidays or it's a nice day for golfing or whatever it might
exactly.
be.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. You got it.
Well, that's great. That's certainly good advice. But I notice you offer a wealth of resources, including your three books through your website. And what's your latest book, The Healing Power of Writing, A Therapist's Guide to Journaling with Clients? Now, is that just for therapists, or can general layman persons like myself get a benefit from that book?
Well, that's a fair question, and the answer to it is yes, you can get benefit from it, because many people who have read it who are not therapists have told me that. The reason it's titled the way it is the publisher is a group of people who have therapists writing for other therapists. So it's designed for therapists. But I'm telling you, some of these stories in here are pretty interesting. There's a lot of case studies protecting, of course, the client's confidentiality.
Yeah.
And there are 70-something exercises.
Oh, wow.
I pretty much can tell you that if you sit down and start reading this book, it will read sort of like a novel. I mean, it's like, what happened next? And by the way, there's all this journaling
story.
Stuff and how to do it. So if you can ignore the second part of the title, it would be great for a general audience or someone interested in personal growth.
Now, where would someone go to preview that book? Or you have a website. What's your website address?
My website is my name. It's SusanBorkin.com, www.SusanBorkin.com.
That's B-O-R-K-I-N is how you
that's
spell
correct,
your name.
Yes. And there's a store on the website. But I really suggest, and you can there's some information about the book on the website, and you just click on that, or just go to Amazon. All three books are available at Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah, the earlier books are When Your Heart Speaks, Take Good Notes. I like that title. And Writing from the Inside Out. They're both sound very intriguing. And I notice you also offer a couple of audio series on writing. And then you have what you call writing circles. What are those exactly? And how could somebody get involved in one of those?
You would just have to write to me, and I'll update you on what's currently happening with that. And that's just Susan@SusanBorkin.com.
Oh,
so again, Susan@SusanBorkin.com.
And I notice you also offer a complimentary free consultation, and that's also how you'd sign up for that?
Yeah, you can, you know, just get in touch with me and tell me what you're looking for, and I'm happy to get back to you and talk about it. There are two things. The writing circle it's so cool because it's virtual. In other words, I can have people literally all over the world. We call in at the same time, and it's kind of like think of it as a virtual writing support group.
Yeah, that's great. It sounds, you know, it's great to talk to other writers or people.
Oh, it is,
have
and we, you know, blocks compare notes
like you have and gone through that and can offer. That's great. I'd be very interested in if I were working on a book and getting involved with that.
If someone's interested in a consultation, just let me know, and we'll just do like a 20-minute thing on the phone to see what your needs are and if I can.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, it's clear in conclusion that Susan Borkin offers a treasure of ideas and resources to help us get over the winter blues, heal the frustration of being stuck at middle age, and put our thoughts into writing. And I can personally attest to the power of gratitude, because calling to mind and concentrating on all the positives in my life today certainly makes me feel better and inspires me to move forward. And I might suggest another cure for the winter doldrums. That's to concentrate on helping out someone else overcome a challenge. Might be a close friend or loved one, or perhaps as a volunteer, a person you haven't even met before. And I also strongly second Susan's suggestions to start writing, begin working on that book you've had in mind, or simply journal your thoughts at the end of the day each day of what good's happened and what good is going to happen tomorrow. And no one has to see your journal unless you want them to. And I can tell you that my whole outlook on life improved when I began writing my two books back in 2005. So give it a charge or a chance, because if I can do it, I'm sure you can. And thank you so much, Susan Borkin, for your January pickup advice. And expressing gratitude makes a ton of sense at any time of the year, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Thank you, Roy.
Enjoy
talking to you.
Now let's all go out and express gratitude and then write down how you feel and how great it makes you feel. Thank you so much, Susan, for being with us today on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Thank you, Roy.
In my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, I lay out 9 common excuses people of middle age often cite for putting off positive life transformation. And on previous programs, we've discussed the first 6 excuses and why none of them makes much sense when you think about it. And on today's program, to close the program, I want to go over the remaining excuses, 7 through 9, and I hope to convince you that none of these 3 makes much sense either. And excuse number 7 is, I'm not a natural leader, I'm just a little person. And I'd say, please refuse absolutely to limit your aspirations for life on a higher plane by branding yourself as a natural follower or a little person. In truth, every one of us is equal in the eyes of God, as we all know, and you need not amass wealth or fame to assume total control over internal emotions or to gain wholehearted respect within your particular corner of the world. After all, the world is not a zero-sum game. Once you've awakened a spirit of joy and adventure within, you may decide to follow with interest the comings and goings of the Donald Trumps and Hillary Clintons of the world. You may even decide to vote for Donald or Hillary, but you must never forget, there is no way that Donald or Hillary Clinton or any other mover or shaker can block or unravel the positive life experience you are building. Without question, you can be a big person and an opinion leader to your spouse and children by giving them your undivided attention and consistently treating them with love and concern. You can be a big person in business or at work by interacting positively with every customer, with your boss and associates in a win-win manner, demonstrating mutual confidence, fairness, and respect. And you can become a big person to friends and neighbors by greeting them warmly, looking out for their interests, and dedicating time, energy, and resources to worthy neighborhood, community, and charitable projects. And let's look at excuse number 8. The world is just too scary right now. I know we all are constantly bombarded with bad news about ISIS or Al-Qaeda and the potential threat of economic upheaval. But guess what? That makes it even more essential that you and I revive our positive emotions. I'm sure most of us remember 9/11/2001, and I'll bet, like me, you learned to focus more upon the present moment and to cherish those individuals closest to you. I'll also wager that soon after the trade towers collapsed, there were lots of hugs around your household, church, or synagogue, and your neighborhood. Family members, friends, and acquaintances, old and new, gathered together to reflect upon the value of life and to reorder individual and collective priorities, maybe just to slow down and take a breath. As you begin to positively transform your life, you will find yourself increasingly capable of challenging the future, certain or uncertain. Because of your strong inner compass, over time you will develop an inherent capacity to stand up to even the most challenging circumstances, and along with a reawakened consciousness, by your very nature, you will begin to respond with warmth and compassion toward those around you, including the less fortunate. Not one of us alone can change the world, but each one of us retains the absolute power to positively influence our little corner of it. And as you seek to revive favorable emotions, you risk absolutely nothing except the loss of a perpetual built-in excuse for beginning and ending each day on a sour note. And the fact that you're sour or pleasant isn't going to affect the world overall situation one bit, so why not be positive? And here's excuse number 9, and I hope it doesn't affect you right now. It hurts too much. If you suffer from the recent traumatic loss of a family member, a cherished friend, or a loved one, life may be too painful at this moment in time to consider an immediate attempt at renewal. The loss of a lifelong companion, a spouse, a son or daughter can darken a once positive outlook and can bring a sudden halt to your search for a brighter tomorrow. And my wife and I lost our daughter a few years ago, so I can understand the logical fear of facing the future and the sorrow of facing the future without him or her. But I simply offer the gentle suggestion that a timely shift in focus from loss, sorrow, and grief to a thoughtfully defined plan for a proactive future may indeed help shorten your period of extreme emotional distress. As early as possible, attempt to take that first small step to recovery. Call your best friend, make plans to attend a social function, venture out with your wife if you lost a child to a movie or a ball game, anything that will make you forget for a moment the grief and sorrow that you're undergoing, and seek whatever outside assistance you may need to advance beyond grief to acceptance. If you believe in a divine being, pray continuously for the strength to carry on. Establish an ongoing relationship with your priest, pastor, or rabbi and your congregation. Consult with qualified professional grief counselor if that helps, and join in a support group with compassionate others who have suffered a similar loss. I know compassionate friends helped my wife and I a lot in that situation. And remind yourself daily that your only realistic course of action is to actively plan out the remainder of your life. No matter how devastating your loss, you simply cannot afford to forfeit control over your future destiny. And seek out a cause or take up a hobby that you always wanted to try. In fact, you may take up a cause and dedicate your efforts to the memory of your lost loved one. And as contradictory as it first may appear, the recovery phase of any life-altering traumatic event may prove in hindsight to be an ideal time for launching personal renewal. Unlike other procrastinators, those suffering from a tragic loss do not have the option of turning back or of clinging to the present. Life circumstances can never be precisely the way they were. For this reason, I urge you, or urge anyone in mourning, to consider that you have only two logical choices: move forward to build a positive future, or remain forever lost in a bitter, hopeless remembrance of the past. And that's really a pretty straightforward choice for anyone to make. In summary, if you are unhappy and unfulfilled with life today, personal circumstances are not likely to improve without early and sustained self-intervention. That means you've got to get off the snide and undertake personal renewal. Obstacles you face today undoubtedly still will remain present tomorrow unless you face them. In truth, there are few, if any, valid excuses for not commencing a comprehensive midstream reexamination of your life today, present and future prospects, and you should begin that this very day. I recently overheard sound advice offered by a wise and caring member of our church congregation. A distraught friend was relaying that the preceding Friday, her husband had been laid off just 1 month after the family had purchased an expensive new home. And the distraught woman lamented the layoff couldn't have come at a worse time. And you know what the wise friend's response was? Well, it was short, but precisely to the point. We don't know that yet. In like manner, you and I have no idea of the positive rewards which may lie just around the corner once we're able to shake off lingering doubts, worries, and fears, bury nagging complacency, and begin an honest quest for a better tomorrow. Please do not wait for an immediate crisis, job loss, divorce, illness, or death of a loved one to challenge you to change. You needn't sit around and accept every protruding nail or tack in your life today. Rather than suffer through the continuing distress of daily experience that's filled with frustration, sorrow, or pain, get up off your uncomfortable spot on life's porch and begin your diligent search for a more accommodating location. And it's out there, believe me. And by the way, you can find my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, by Roy C. Richards, on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or on our website, MiddleAgeRenewal.com. And my book provides a comprehensive roadmap from A to Z, from where you are today to where you want to be, and helps you define where you want to be, including 18 self-help exercises to help get you there. And I highly recommend, I invite you to preview my book today. It just may be something that will inspire you to renew your life at midstream. And that's our program for today. Goodbye for now. Tune in next week when we'll talk about prospects for our country's future as the political primary season begins. I'm sure you'll want to join us. See you then. Goodbye for now.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.